You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The coronavirus pandemic, it has disrupted school for at least 55 million K-12 students. Some authors for young readers, they're turning to social media to meet up with their fans, reading their works online, offering drawing tutorials to help with the strange new hours of forced homeschool in America. So are you a teacher? What advice can you give parents right now to keep their kids reading? Are you a student being assigned to read during social distancing? Have you found yourself reading more? What are you into these days? We're at 800-642-1234. Kathleen Horning is director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center of the School of Education at UW-Madison. She is a former children's librarian. Katie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So how is your center, the Cooperative Children's Book Center, how are you working through the pandemic?
Well, there are only four librarians on our staff, and we're all working from home. And our biggest challenge is we aren't seeing the new books as they come in, as we usually do every day. But happily, one of our librarians, Madeline Tyner, is on a national award committee right now that is looking at all of the children's books published in the United States. She's still continuing to get the books from home, at home. So we do at least have access through her, and she's able to read and keep track of things. But I would say all of the work we do is so dependent on the books themselves and what we're seeing and reading. We did each, on our last day in the library, take home a great big bag of books to read, and we're hoping to have some sort of book exchange at some point in this process so we can share them with each other.
I think people are reading, though. I checked little free library outside our house yesterday. It had been picked clean, not a single book left in it. And it was chock full just, you know, a few weeks ago. So I think people may be turning to some books. You know, that's anecdotal for me, but I found it pretty exciting to see that my free little library location was dry.
Right. And, you know, I love audiobooks, and so one thing I've noticed is books I've had on hold for, you know, that the original hold was going to be 6 months, all of a sudden that's jumped to 2 months. So I think people are also listening to a lot of audiobooks that they're able to get from the public library.
Yeah, what are those distance abilities with our libraries? We can't go to them right now, many of them right now across Wisconsin. So what is outreach like? What can we do online?
Well, you know, again, audiobooks. I think the South Central Library System in Wisconsin, and I'm sure the various library systems throughout the state, have really good audiobook selection that I'm always surprised the number of people that don't know about them. But you can borrow those books for free, and you sometimes have to wait a little while for, because you can only have them out for 2 weeks. So you have to wait until someone else is finished listening. But those are a really good option, both for adults and children. There are many children's books on audio, and oftentimes they're just excellent being read to children by a professional narrator. And then there are also ebooks that are available if you happen to have the right platform, like an iPad, or even you can read on your phone. I think that takes particularly young eyes. And I know it's not quite the same thing as holding a book in your hand, but certainly children, and I think especially children in, you know, fifth grade and up seem to be pretty comfortable with reading ebooks and electronic media. So it's also possible to read a book and listen to the audiobook as well. So it just depends. Another thing I always stress is parents reading aloud to their children and finding good books that you can read to, say you have three kids of different ages. Mm-hmm. There are some excellent books that all three of them would enjoy hearing. They might understand different things about the books, but that's another way to share books. You may have books in your home that you can read, and I wouldn't hesitate to reread. a favorite book. I think particularly a good children's book, if a child reads it at 8 and then reads it again at 10 or 11, oftentimes they see completely different things the second time. And many children are great rereaders. They'll reread. How many kids have reread the Harry Potter books, for example, over and over again? And I think rereading, I don't think it has to be a new book every time. Rereading is a really valid form of reading and often very pleasurable.
We're talking with Katie Horning, director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center of the School of Education at UW-Madison, and she's past president of the Association for Library Service to Children of the American Library Association, talking about how you're helping your kids read right now as they're at home during the pandemic. Join in with your suggestions and your tips on how to get kids to read. We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Katie, you were talking earlier there about professional narrators, and one internet trend that seems to be taking off is celebrities and authors. They're coming out of the woodwork reading to kids on social media. We've seen Amy Adams and Jennifer Garner, just so many. Author Susie Jaramillo reading Little Sunny Sunshine, and here is just a snippet of that.
Moon, loony, loony, rattle, tattle, toony, the world I'll explore way up high and up a loony.
Okay, otra vez en español. ¿Listos? Ready?
Luna, lunera, cascabelera, mañana volaré. Porque el mundo me espera.
Ah, isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing at this moment from authors? How are they connecting to readers?
Well, a lot of authors are already connected to readers via social media. Many of them have a really strong social media presence. And it has been really interesting to see how so many children's and young adult authors have risen to the occasion. And publishers across the country pretty quickly gave blanket permission to read aloud books in a broadcast. You know, there's always a copyright issue with doing that, but they've said in these circumstances, which are very unusual, it's fine to do that. So there are authors reading their own books aloud. I know that I read recently R.J. Palacio, the author of Wonder, is going to start reading her book aloud for people to tune in and listen to. And that's an extremely popular book right now, both actually with children and adults. It's been on the bestseller list for quite some time.
And that's a book my daughter just read over and over and over again.
And she may enjoy just hearing the author read it. I mean, there is something about hearing an author read his or her own words. And then graphic novelist Jarrett Karashka is, I think you alluded to it earlier, he's offering daily drawing lessons for kids. And that is a really amazing gift, I think, to children. It doesn't last very long, so it's not like a really long, kind of tedious class. And he's fun. He really knows how to engage with children. Oftentimes, children's authors and artists spend a lot of time in classrooms, do a lot of school visits, so they know how to talk to kids, and they know what kinds of questions kids ask. So they're really good at this type of performance or presentation.
Talking with Katie Horning, who stays with us. She's the director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center. Are you a librarian? How is your facility helping kids at this time to read? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in a moment with Katie Horning here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about kids and reading here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So some of our beloved children's authors and illustrators, they're popping up online. Oliver Jeffers, Mo Willems, thank you so much for reading and doodling with our kids. They're helping to entertain and bridge the social distances for kids who are cooped up at home right now. And some authors have united under initiatives like Stay In Storytime and Operation Storytime. So has your child participated in one of these online offerings? How did it go? And parents, how are you helping your kids keep up on reading with schools closed? How often is it happening? Do you have a routine down? Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Katie Horning is an author, and she is the head of the Cooperative Children's Book Center at UW-Madison. So, Katie, my daughter, and I mentioned this earlier, she's reading Little Women right now in a book group with newly formed book group with her great aunt and her grandmother and her mother, who happens to be falling behind on reading chapters. So that is the reality at our house. But they we all meet twice a week, Wednesdays and Saturdays. And, you know, we're all in different places and all in different states. How do parents right now, when they are really strapped for time, how are we spending more time at, you know, in times for reading? How do we do this?
Well, I think that actually that what you just described is a great idea. Even if it's a parent and a child reading the same book and then getting together to discuss it. And it's interesting for parents to see how their children perceive books. Oftentimes I think everyone assumes that people read the same book when they're reading the same words, and they don't. And it's interesting for a parent to see what a child understands and doesn't understand. What I've found in discussing books with children is they oftentimes understand a lot more in terms of content than I realized they could. But where they have trouble is with the structure of a story. If they're just, you know, like a flashback or something, change in setting. It's actually the physical structure of a story that's often a challenge. I think that certainly parents are having a lot of time with their kids in a way they haven't expected, and some may see this as a gift. Others may see it as a bit more of a burden. In fact, I remember seeing the second day of this, the producer, Shonda Rhimes, saying, after 1 hour and 18 minutes of homeschooling my children, I think teachers should be paid $1 billion. But, you know, just many, many, many people, adults, they don't have any training in how to be a teacher, and that's not something you can just pick up overnight. So I think parents are putting in their best effort and doing the best they can. But one thing we do know about children and learning is that reading is a key part of that. And if you do nothing more than allow a child time to read, time to choose books on their own, and if you read with a child, that's the best possible thing that you can be doing. And the reading comprehension skills are really the foundation of everything that a child goes on to learn. So this time could be thought of as, you think of the summer when children are most children are out of school, and public libraries have summer reading programs, summer library reading programs, to encourage kids to keep reading over the summer. There's actually something called a summer slide, where children who don't read over the summer, actually their reading scores fall back, and that's just something that's been studied for many years and is a reality. So anything you can do to keep children reading in the summer helps keep their reading up. And I would say during this time, think of it as summer, when even though you can't go outside and go places, you can still spend time reading and keep the child's reading skills up. Those are so important.
Yeah, Katie, one of my kids has a real appetite right now for survival books and is really into the I Survived series, the Lauren Tarshis series. Mm-hmm. You know, books like that that they may want to see a pandemic in a different way or gather more history on destruction in the past. What would you recommend there in terms of reading?
Well, it really depends on what the child's tastes are. First of all, I would say, you know, living through a pandemic, I'm not sure how much people really want to read about it. Perhaps children do, but I would be curious to find that out from children who love reading what we call dystopic fiction. And many people right from the outset of this are comparing what we're going through to Hunger Games, which is a really popular survival, kind of an extreme survival series. But there are all kinds of different sorts of survival stories, from ones that are done in a fantasy environment, which may be, there are ones that are set in nature, the child against the environment type of thing, trying to survive alone. Think of like a shipwreck type of scenario or a plane crash. And then there are just a lot about imagining a future where everything is a little bit different from how it is now, which is sort of what we're living through now. Everything is a little bit different.
And a little topsy-turvy.
There have been young adult novels in particular, many of them in the last, I would say, 10 years or so, that have sort of written a scenario like what we're living through now. So whether or not those will ring true once you do live through something like this. Someone said, don't worry, I've read this story before, and we all know that a 17-year-old girl is going to come in and save us all. Because that is the trope in so many young adult novels that deal with some element of survival. There's a book that came out last year that does the fantasy element of this, which I think is really good, called Lelani of the Distant Sea by Erin Entrada Kelly. And it is about a girl who leaves her, she lives in an island community, and they're just sort of, the people are really, really struggling to just maintain life on this island, and they need a change in weather. And so she sets off on a journey with a little boat to try to find a solution to the problem. Now, this is one of the things about survival novels. Usually the child is sweeping in and doing something heroic and
saving the day. Yeah.
That's not a terribly realistic story, obviously. It's a pure escape. So kids living through it might actually enjoy another type of escape. It'll be interesting to see if your child is still want to focus on survival stories. Maybe they offer comfort because they're familiar and they tell the story we're living through with a happy ending. And maybe your child will want to change course and read something completely different.
Another one of your favorites is Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky. What do you love
about?
Yeah.
That's a really great book. Now, I know a lot of people listening out there are familiar with Rick Riordan, who does the Percy Jackson series, extremely popular with kids now. And this is part of a series that he oversees called Rick Riordan Presents, which use stories by diverse authors. And Tristan Strong is an African-American boy visiting his grandparents in the South, and he manages to literally punch a hole in the sky and enter a parallel universe that's populated by characters from African myth and legend and African-American folktales. So John Henry is a big character in this. And he, and as well as many of the characters like Brer Fox, for example, it's just a completely different world, but there are elements of African-American history in it. And it's funny. It's one of my favorite books from last year. So I'm glad Rick Riordan is helping. These are all new, mostly debut authors or first-time writing for children.
Yeah. And with so much doodling going on online right now, you really like New Kid by Jerry Craft, which is a graphic novel.
Right. And that book won the Newbery Award this year. And that's the first time a graphic novel has ever won the Newbery Award, which has been around for almost 100 years now. And that's about an African-American boy in middle school who is starting his first year in an elite school that's mostly white, not completely white, but the kids are upper class, and he's working class. And so it deals with class differences. It deals with racial differences. It's really funny, but it's also very deep and meaningful.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
Katie Horning is director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center of the School of Education at UW-Madison. To find your next book to read, go to WPR.org/mornings. You can find a link to the center's list of top choices for 2020. Coming up, we learn about supports for small businesses in Wisconsin that are reeling from the economic effects of the coronavirus. Do you own a small business? Are you applying for a small business disaster loan? Have you received one in the past? Join in now with your questions, your situation, 800-642-1234. We'll talk small business disaster assistance right after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Small Business Administration, or the SBA, it provides low-interest, long-term loans to small businesses in the event of a disaster. And since the COVID-19 pandemic has been declared a disaster, small businesses are now able to access up to $2 million in loans through the SBA to cover losses. So has your small business been deemed non-essential and is now closed? Are you worried that this temporary closure will lead to a permanent closure without some kind of financial bridge? Bring your situation, your questions about these loans, 800-642-1234. Eric Ness is Wisconsin District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. Eric, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, great to be here, Kate.
So federal disaster loans are now available for Wisconsin small businesses. What kind of response has there been to these loans becoming available?
We're getting a lot of responses. In fact, we're doing sessions every day from 10 and 2, and we're getting, so far during this week, probably over 200 small businesses getting more information on each session to learn how to put in for the emergency injury disaster loan. So
you're doing webinars every day from 10 to 2. What are small businesses telling you right now? What are they asking when they talk with you on these webinars?
Well, they're asking who's eligible, will their business fit in, can they put in the application, and talking a little bit about the forms that they will need to fill out. So we're kind of answering questions during those sessions to try to help them get their applications ready and together.
Do you have any hard numbers yet? How many Wisconsin businesses have applied and how many have been approved yet?
At this point, I don't have hard numbers of how many applied. We are getting emails from folks who have gotten their applications accepted and now waiting through the processing of them.
So the SBA loan site, it went down yesterday. Was that a crash due to demand? What happened?
Crash due to demand, and they're reworking it and expanding it so that people can get back into it again.
So let's work through some of these questions that you mentioned. What businesses can apply for loan assistance?
So businesses that can apply are small businesses, small agricultural cooperatives, small aquaculture businesses, and most private nonprofit organizations.
And what defines a small business?
So basically, if you go on sba.gov/size, we look at NAICS codes for the size standards of the different businesses. So it depends on which industry you're in. You can look up the industry that fits you, and then the size standard will be beside it.
So what are NAICS codes? What do you mean there?
NAICS codes are called our North American Industry Classification System Code. So that's how they classify businesses, the different industries and businesses.
What is the timeline here? How long does it take from loan application submission to when a business is getting the funding?
So historically, it's a little over 3 weeks to go through the process and get the funding. Of course, we're in unprecedented times, but that's what the information we're giving out right now is what our historical terms have been.
Is the federal government doing things to meet the demand right now that you're seeing? You're seeing an influx. Do you have enough people and processors in place to meet the influx?
So they're ramping up now, and I know they're using private sector industry businesses, too, to do the loan applications and go through the loan approvals.
We're talking with Eric Ness. He is the Wisconsin District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. We're looking at these disaster loans that are now available for small businesses in Wisconsin that can be used to help with coronavirus-related closures and cost deficits. You can join in with your questions. Maybe you've received a small business disaster loan in the past. How did it work for your business? Has your business been deemed non-essential and is now closed? Are you concerned that this temporary closure will lead to a permanent closure? What would help right now? Join in with your questions, your situation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Eric, have you been in a situation like this before when you've seen such an influx of need for these loans? How have you responded in the past? How have you been informed by history here?
Well, of course, a year or so ago, we had the floods in South Central and Southwestern Wisconsin, and we did have SBA disaster loans coming through at that point. Interesting to note that if you did get a disaster loan historically with the SBA in Wisconsin, we have deferred those loan payments until December 31st of 2020. And just an FYI, too, is on our regular 7A and 504 loans, you can contact your local lender to look at deferments on those loans also for up to 6 months. And for our micro lenders also that have SBA microloans, you can also discuss with them on deferring your loan payments for 6 months.
And for these loans, what are the terms? How long do you pay back these loans?
Great question. Basically, what we're looking at is a small business and what their small business is needing on a monthly basis to stay in business. So that could be their fixed payments, their debt payments, their rent payments, their payroll, their accounts payable, and other bills that they could have paid if their business was open or they were bringing in funds, but they can't pay now. So what we're looking at doing is replacing those funds on a monthly basis and then offering that as a loan to that small business, and those loans can go up to $2 million. The interest rate is 3.75% fixed for small businesses and 2.75% fixed for nonprofit organizations, and we can go out 30 years on those loans. And the first 12 months are going to be deferred, so you will not be making a loan payment. And then what we'll do is, I think what we're looking at is typically 15 to 30-year amortizations, and naturally, the longer you go out, the lower the cash flow or the cash payments.
Yeah, so this is really sounding more like a mortgage in a way for these businesses. And so this is funding really that is helping to replace the operating and the overhead costs that a small business can't cover at the moment?
Exactly.
So do these loans help? Do they make a difference?
Well, they make a difference that we're talking to a lot of small businesses who say, I can't make my payments. You know, what can I do? And so this will bring the money that they need to make those payments. A lot of folks are using lines of credit or, you know, other sources of funds to make those payments, and they'll need that money back so that they can operate after this is over.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Eric Ness, who is the Wisconsin District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration, as we look at these disaster loans. So, Eric, going back to the terms of these loans, is collateral required?
So, basically, if your loan is Under $25,000, there is not a required collateral, but over $25,000, we will take collateral, but we will go behind whoever else has collateral ahead of us. So we cannot turn down a loan for lack of collateral.
And so how do people and businesses or nonprofits, how do they begin this loan application? What do they do?
Well, of course, it's a little challenging now with the website being down, but when the website is up, there's online applications where you can go in and fill in the application. One of the things that we're telling businesses is first they have to go online and register and make sure you remember your password and your registration, because if you get logged off or you need to go get more information, you have to remember that so that you can get back into your application. And so then you go through the process of filling out the different forms out there, and there's a SBA Form 5, there's a IRS Form 4506T. So basically, all of those forms actually can be accessed now. We have it on our SBA.gov Wisconsin website, and we do SBA.gov updates. And then if you do that and put in your zip code, we're sending updates and sending forms out to you so you can take a look at the forms while the website is down and continue to do your application.
So you're saying like hard forms are sent out, or is this through through email?
Yeah, they're online.
Online, okay. And do you have any indication when the website is expected to be back up and running?
Well, I was on a call late last night. They told me today it would be up. So that's what I'm going with.
Do you find that there is an urgent need right now as you hold webinars each day, as you're hearing from small businesses? Were they prepared for this moment?
Well, we naturally ask businesses to be prepared for a couple months if things like this happen, but it was quite surprising, and especially people weren't prepared that their business, all their customers would start coming in and that they're closed. So, yes, that's a hard thing to prepare for. I don't think any of us were prepared for that.
Yeah, so certainly keeping a reserve on those balance sheets is going to be helpful right now to be able to bridge that in order to even get that loan, because 3 weeks can feel like an eternity if you don't have the resources.
Yes, it can.
The Small Business Administration approved Wisconsin's request for small businesses affected by the COVID-19 pandemic to access low-interest federal disaster loans. We have Eric Ness, who is talking us through these loans. He is Wisconsin's District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. So what do you want to know about eligibility and the criteria for a loan approval? Have you had one of these loans in the past? Was it a bridge for your business to get to more solid financial footing? What does your balance sheet look like right now? Will you be able to hold on for how many weeks or months? Do you need to turn to these loans? Have you started the application? Did you find the website was down? Are you going to go back? Join in the conversation at any point here, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll talk more in a moment with Eric Ness. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's Small Business Administration office is offering daily webinars to answer questions about the SBA's economic injury disaster loans for small businesses affected by COVID-19. We're looking at what these federal disaster loans do and how many small businesses in the state may want to borrow this way. Still time for your questions. 800-642-1234. Eric Ness is our guide. He's Wisconsin's District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. Let's take a call now. Gerard's joining us from Mount Horeb this morning. Hi, Gerard.
Hello.
What's your situation like?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in regard to a small historic restaurant in Monticello, Wisconsin. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yeah, so you're with a business in Monticello. What are you facing? What's your question?
Are you providing for small restaurant loans, disaster loans?
Yes, we are. So small restaurant loans are eligible. So are manufacturers, sports vendors, owners of rental property, retailers, souvenir shops, travel agency, and wholesalers. So yes, you do qualify.
Gerard, thank you for the call. Chris now in Portage. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'd like to understand what Chuck Schumer means when I heard him yesterday say that these small business loans will be forgiven at the end of the disaster.
So there's legislation going through yesterday and today, and I think that what they're speaking on are new programs that are coming out. Right now, we have the Emergency Industry Disaster or Injury Disaster Loan, but I believe there's going to be more programs to help out small businesses. And as soon as I get that information, we will let you know.
Chris, thank you. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Should I just follow your website, the SBA.gov?
Yes. One thing you can do is go to SBA.gov/updates. And you can put in your email address. It's going to ask for your zip code, and we will send you updates as soon as that happens, and we will get that information out. And, yes, watch the media and our website. That information will be coming out.
Thanks, Chris. Let's go to GW now in Stevens Point with a question. Hi, GW.
Hi. This sounds like a great program. I have a couple of friends who have had their income tax returns scammed by scam artists, and which causes me to, as a taxpayer, to wonder how carefully the screening of these companies applying for these loans is going to be done to make sure that a scam artist does not apply for a loan in the name of an existing business that they really don't have anything to do with.
Well, we're going to be running credit reports, and we will be looking into those businesses and verifying that they are in business. So, yes, we are going to be taking a look at that. And right now we are also updating our website and making sure that, number one, you can get into it and it's secure.
Steve from Sun Prairie had a similar question and wants to know who takes on the risk if a business can't pay back the loan.
So on the EIDL loan, it is a loan. So basically, you will personally guarantee the loan. So the small business is taking on that risk.
You were mentioning earlier there, Chris in Portage and Senator Chuck Schumer of New York. What changes or improvements to these loan programs and processes might be included in that $2 trillion economic stimulus that's moving through Congress?
So I'm not going to really go into the specifics of the program because that's still being worked out and it hasn't been signed at this point. But as soon as it does come out, we will get that information out when the program is ready to come to Wisconsin. I know that we have a number of lenders that are contacting us, too, because it could work through our lending community. And so we're waiting for, and we'll get that information out as soon as we can get it.
How strong is our lending community right now? What are their needs?
Well, naturally, they have a lot of small businesses that are in need right now, and they're wanting to work with us to help those small businesses so that they can stay in business. And that's, as long as we can keep our businesses in business, that helps everybody.
A lot of these types of relationships with bankers had often been face-to-face, had often been sitting down to work through documents, to work through a small business, situation. How do you do that all online now? Is everything in place to do that?
Well, we are. Of course, we're doing things online. Our lenders are doing things online. And another important assistant is our network of providers that are doing things online. So we have the Small Business Development Center network, which is through the University of Wisconsin's campuses, and they're doing online counseling with businesses to kind of help them with the forms as they're going through. We have our Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Corporation, who's also working with their clients and other clients to help them through this process. Western Wisconsin's Women's Business Center up in Independence and Eau Claire, and our SCORE chapters, who are volunteers who work with small businesses and can do consulting with them. They are consulting online, and also our Veterans Business Outreach Center. So we'll have that information online that people can access, so they can get, if they want to ask questions or maybe talk about some specific forms. I talked to our SBDC network, and they're going to make their folks available just to be able to talk with businesses on that.
We are talking with Eric Ness, who is the Wisconsin District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. Still time for your questions about these federal disaster loans. What would you spend a small business disaster loan on? Is it payroll? Is it mortgage? Is it other bills? What does your overhead look like and your balance sheet? How much can you incur? How much of this stress, this health crisis, can you absorb? Can your small business last? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Eric, how are you getting information out about these loans and how people might be able to check back and stay in touch on all of these different resources? Is there some sort of clearinghouse?
Well, of course, our website is available. We're doing the online training. We're also doing online training specifically on for government, for businesses who are working on government contracts, because naturally, if they're running into issues and completing those government contracts or getting new requests, we want a place for them to be able to communicate with us so that we can help them with questions they may be having.
Do you know at all how many of these disaster loan applications are denied?
Well, I think that this is an unprecedented time. And because of that, what we are doing is encouraging all businesses to apply, because we need these businesses in business at this point. And at this point, I do not have a decline number. So let's continue to work with them. And even if you are declined, you can go through a process of reconsideration, and we would work with that business to get them information on how to do that.
What documentation would a business need on hand to apply for one of these loans?
So basically, what we're going to do is look at some of your historical tax statements, because what we want to show is that you've been viable before the loan and so that you can be viable after. But right now, we realize that a lot of people haven't filled out their tax statements. So we have waived the current tax statement, and as long as the loan is $500,000 or less.
Donald from La Crosse called with a question about landlords. Donald is hoping landlords consider postponing rent payments for tenants who are in a financial crisis here. Would landlords be eligible for loans if they postpone payments?
Yes. If their payments aren't coming in, naturally that's going to have an adverse effect on the landlord. So, yes, they are eligible.
Ken from De Pere emailed to ask about nonprofits, especially churches, at this time. Are they eligible for small business loans?
Actually, that is the one entity, the entities that are ineligible for this loan are agricultural enterprises, which is like your farming enterprises, and we're having those businesses talk to Farm Service Agency through Department of Agriculture, religious organizations, charitable organizations, gambling concerns, casinos and racetracks, and real estate developers.
Eric, thank you for joining us.
Great. It's great to be here.
Eric Ness is the Wisconsin District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. Just ahead, you have a line to State Representative Robin Voss about the governor's stay-at-home order, how the legislature is responding. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.